Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Okay, my friends, welcome again to another exciting Tuesday night where we cover everything going on all over the world. We live in a crazy world. This week was no different. Not very many good things happened this week, but a lot of bad things happened. Things that I would like to share with you, in some instances exposed to you. I am most happy if you wish to call in and discuss anything with me, agree with me, disagree with me, say hello, how are you, whatever. The guest call-in number is on the screen in front of you, 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. I am going to start this evening with the United States, and I'm going to stay here for two or three different items before I move on to Great Britain, Russia, Korea, China, what have you, Greece, and even Mongolia, if I have enough time at the end of the show. Starting with the United States, breaking news today, first time I've ever used that term, because what I'm going to share with you now, you may already have heard today, it's been all over the television news shows, it's been hit big time on the internet, and I'm talking about the report that came out showing that corporate CEOs, their salaries are up this year, big time. The chiefs of the major corporations in the United States are making more money today than ever before. This is the breaking news. The average income of a corporate CEO in the United States, and by average I mean the mean income, it for the first time hit $10 million. It is $10.5 million a year. Can you imagine? These fat cats are making $10.5 million a year while you're working for much less, of course. That number of 10.5 million is up 50% in the last 5 years from 2009. Can you imagine, since relatively the beginning of the mortgage recession in this country and bad times, the guys at the top have more than doubled their income? Wowee. I want to share with you also that most of the people may be around 10, but two of the fat cats made in excess of $60 million this past year. More than $60 million. This is an example of how the 1% and 99% works, because those numbers are very true, very accurate, and very representative. The 1% are the banks, the CEOs, and by the way, the bankers are part of this whole ballgame too, of corporate CEOs. They're making more money. While Main Street is not eating, that's the 99% in this country. Our middle class has been destroyed, having difficulty coming back. People can't pay their mortgages. Some have lost their homes. People can't pay their rent. Some people are working two. A lot of people are working three jobs, and the wife is working two or three jobs to keep the household going, to put food on the table, okay? That's the way it's going. While these guys are making multi-million dollars a year. Now, here's, and by the way, I said the banks again are in this ball game, because the banks got the biggest bump since last year, bank CEOs. Remember the banks? The pigs. I call them pigs and whores. They caused the recession in 2008 that is still killing us, but they survived it with no trouble because our government said they were too big to prosecute, too big to arrest, and look what happens. Do you know that in the last year, bank CEOs got the biggest pay bump? You know how much it was? Their salary in 1 year went up 22% on an average, whereas the rest of the corporations only went up a little under 9%. So the banks are doing well. The pigs are doing well. They're still eating, but they're still not making the loans to Main Street that they should. They're still not helping the people on Main Street. They only care about themselves on Wall Street. Another thing that bothers me about this is the corporations, these CEOs and their hierarchy, are fighting the raise to the minimum wage that Obama wants. They don't want an increase in the minimum wage. They say, we'll have to increase the cost of our goods. We'll have to lay people off and all this sort of malarkey. I don't buy it. Not when you're making $10.5 million a year on an average, and you got some people as high as in the $60 million bracket, okay? What really is happening here, at least from my perspective, I don't know if you agree with me, I think the corporations and the banks are spitting in the face, you heard me, they're spitting in the face of the American public. They are offering no help to the middle class and to any other people. And what bothers me the most, and maybe it shouldn't bother me, bad things, I believe, will come of this. You can't keep defecating on those below you. You just can't do it. You can't push the people around who are below you. You can't ignore these people because they make up the numbers in this country. And I can hear rumblings, and you can hear rumblings too. Don't tell me you don't. Nobody says anything outward, but they just, in effect, tell you, we're getting screwed. This shouldn't happen. A lot of people are upset. Those rumblings could change into something more active at any time. I hope this never happens. But we're going there unless we can change the way our government is operating and the way our corporate hierarchy is operating in this country. Now let me go to General Motors. I want to show you what pigs really do. I got to use that term. And I won't say I'm not trying to be offensive. I am being offensive, but I'm calling a spade a spade. Here's the situation with General Motors. We heard they had a defective ignition switch. For 10 years, they knew about this defective ignition switch in their new cars, and they knew that accidents were being caused. They knew that in that 10-year period, 13 people were killed as a result of this defective ignition switch. Where many people were injured badly as a result of accidents. And what did they do? They didn't do anything, because if they had to fix it, retool, it would have cost them a lot of money, cut into their profitability. So they kept quiet until finally it came out, and now it's been exposed after 10 years. Well, they testified before Congress, their CEO and everybody else, we're going to do better. We've appointed one person. He's just going to be responsible for making sure these things never happen again. If there's a defect, instantaneous recalls, we fix everything, and we're taking care of this problem. The defective ignition switch problem involved 2.19 million cars. 2.1 million cars, can you imagine? Well, they had to be punished. Nobody got arrested because we don't arrest big guys in this country. We only arrest little guys. And they were fined by the United States government, by the Department of Transportation, $35 million. Now think, they sold 2.1 million cars for 10 years that were screwed up. They knew it, made a hell of a lot of money, much more than $35 million, and that's a drop in the bucket to their profit factor here. But they paid the fine. And the $35 million, by the way, was the largest amount that they could be penalized. You couldn't get a nickel more because the law says it's limited to $35 million. Well, here's what's happening. This whole thing blew 3 or 4 months ago, it came out, and everything supposedly was resolved about 4 or 6 weeks ago. They paid their fine. They appeared before Congress in mea culpa. I'll never do it again. And what do you think came out this past week? So far, of the 2.1 million cars, do you know how many have been fixed? 47,000. Only 47,000 out of more than 2 million defective cars have been repaired. Well, why? General Motors was asked, why? Why is this happening? Why haven't you fixed? Because remember, people are driving cars with almost 2 million cars. 2.1 million less 47,000 cars are on the road yet with this defective switch, which killed 13 people and caused major injuries to tons of other people. Why are the cars still on the road? Why haven't they been fixed? And what do you think General Motors says? Well, it's not really our fault. We don't make that ignition switch. We buy it from a supplier. It's called Delphi is the name of the supplier. And they can only get us so many at a time. Well, let me tell you something. I was General Motors and this is my problem, I got to be a big customer to Delphi. They better move their asses, work 3 shifts a day, 24 hours a day, and get that product out to me. They're going to make a ton more of money over a short period of time, and I'm going to do what I promised the country I was going to do in the Congress of the United States. But they're not doing that. They said we got to wait for Delphi. The other thing is, and I don't buy this excuse at all, I find it revolting. They're saying, and you know, People don't bring their cars in when we have a recall to be repaired. They don't come in swiftly. That may be the normal course. I don't believe it in this situation where it's been all over the papers, all over the world about this defective ignition switch. Everybody that ever bought one of their cars in the last 10 years is waiting to get that recall notice, and I can't believe anyone with knowledge about the situation is out there driving a car that could cause their death or a member of their family to die or be injured. What a crock. And you know why? Because nobody can do anything to General Motors other than what has already been done, the $35 million fine. They don't care about the lawsuits for the injuries and the deaths against them because their insurance companies are going to take care of that. So they're walking away for $35 million, and if it takes them 6 months in a year or a year to repair the cars, so what? And if there are a few extra accidents, so what also? Isn't it terrible? It's awful. Absolutely awful. Now, let's go on to two other companies in the United States. And I want to share this with you to show you things are not as good as everyone says in this country. I've done other shows on this. I did a TV show on this. I've written a column on this. And certain companies that we supposedly think might be strong or should be strong are not strong. A lot are going under. And why? The why is because companies that depend on the 1% and the people of the United States to support them aren't getting the support that they normally would because people don't have any money. They're not spending as much at the store. Let's take Sears Roebuck, for example. Sears has been in trouble for several years. They've especially been in trouble since 2008. Sears, in the last quarter of this year, lost $402 million. Last year, they lost a total of $279 million. So in four quarters last year, they lose $279 million. In one quarter this year, $402. Their sales have dropped off steadily over a seven-year period. All right, that means going back to 2007. Are they going to make it? We don't know. Everyone's worried in the money world about whether Sears is going to make it. But Sears, the people who are at the top, those CEOs making $10.5 million a year or $60 million a year, they don't buy their clothes from Sears Roebuck. It's you and me and everyone else. That 99% that goes to a store like Sears Roebuck to buy clothes and other things, and people don't have the money even to make those minimal type purchases. Another company is Hewlett-Packard. They're a big technology company, lots of computers. They do business with big companies, but they do business with small companies primarily, okay? They already announced before last week that they were going to lay off 34,000 people this year because business is bad. People weren't buying. And guess what? This past week they announced that in addition to the 34,000 they had already announced they were going to lay off, they were going to lay off an additional 12,000 to 16,000 more people. Things are not as good as they may seem. And I'm going to tell you, those fat cats at the top earning those millions of dollars, these companies keep failing. You're going to have fewer and fewer fat cats. Now let's move on. I want to stay within the United States for one more moment, if I may. Military suicides. This is big stuff. Big stuff. And the figures I'm going to get you will drive it right home. And I wrote on this past week also. I wrote my newspaper column on this. Here's the story. We just celebrated Memorial Day, a day where we honor our war dead, those who made the supreme sacrifice. Well, we don't talk about those soldiers who commit suicide. This has become a new thing in the last 10 to 15 years, more in the last 10 years, where we're fighting two wars at one time, and we're sending our servicemen out not for one tour of duty in the battlefield, but for two and three. And they got screwed up. You can only put people under pressure so long, especially the reservists who thought they were going to be two-week, you know, veterans every year and go to summer camp and one night a week someplace else and draw a check. They're called up to serve also. Pressure is heavy, okay? Door-to-door fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we don't hear about what I'm going to share with you now. Do you know, did you know, this year alone, since January 1st, 1,892 1,892 active military personnel, soldiers working in the service of our country, committed suicide. That's since the first of this year. We haven't even reached 6 months yet. We're still short of 6 months. 1,892 committed suicide. On top of that, the Veterans Administration estimates that veterans who have served but left and they're still screwed up from the fighting, 22 suicides a day. 22 suicides a day by veterans, primarily based on what occurred to them while they were in battle on behalf of you and me in Afghanistan and Iraq. What are we doing about this? This is a new problem. We never had this type of problem before, and at least not to this extent. That a bad thing is there's no military benefits, by the way. Whether you kill yourself in the service or when you're a veteran, your family gets no military benefits. They don't even pay to bury you. Something needs to be done. We have to have benefits to the survivors. But more so, we have to fix whatever the problem is that caused these people, these girls and boys and girls. I'm from another generation. I refer to them as boys and girls. To commit suicide, to kill themselves because of whatever they were confronted with in the wars for their country. Now we're going over to Great Britain. I'm going to stay with soldiers and armies and all that sort of thing. The United Kingdom, Great Britain, is in trouble also with their military, as we do not have enough military people in the United States, and we keep reusing. We reuse our soldiers all the time by sending them to war once, twice, sometimes three times. In Great Britain, they're recruiting now young people into the service. One in ten new soldiers recruited, okay, in Great Britain this past year were 16 years old. That's all, just 16 years old, not 17 years old, not 18. They're down to 16-year-olds, one in ten. Recruited this past year. They also have advised us that one in four of the new personnel recruited in the past year were under the age of 18. So they've got a bunch of kids now. They're teenagers. Let's face it. They are teenagers, and they're signing up. Now, the rule is they can't go into combat, but the numbers say some of them have been used already. I don't know. Something's wrong when our government has to rely. I call these kids children. I call them kids. They're children. They're not even 18 years old. Think of yourself at 16. Think of your children at 16. Think of your grandchildren at 16. They're not ready to be in the service, and they should not have to fight unless they're guerrillas in the mountains someplace because we've got extreme problems and we've gone to the mountains to defend ourselves. Okay? Something's wrong with the way we're recruiting. We've got all kinds of gaps in our armed forces in the United States and in Great Britain. And we've got to do something about it, because if we don't, something bad's going to happen with these kids. Maybe more suicides. I don't know, but it can't be healthy. Now I want to go to Russia. Putin's doing terrific. No one can deny, I don't mean I agree with everything he's doing, but I got to tell you, I've come to respect him as a leader, as a businessman. He don't screw around. He does what he wants, when he wants, and he does it. There's no waiting. There's no bullshit. There's no let's have a conference or this or that. He is a dictator, in effect. He operates a totalitarian state, and this is how things get done quickly. What was announced, the most recent thing that Putin has announced or has come out of Russia and Iran this past week is the following. We have been told that there may be, not definitely, there may be an agreement soon signed between Russia and Iran whereby Russia will build 4 to 8 new nuclear reactors in Iran. Now, I don't understand this. This was talked about a couple of years ago, but nothing came of it. In the meantime, this past year, Obama, the United States, and Iran have been talking. We're going to love each other now, but we got to take care of this nuclear reactor problem. We got to watch and see what you're doing. You claim you need it for electricity. We question it. The Israelis question it. And we've been negotiating with them to come out with some kind of a deal, hard-ass negotiations. In the meantime, it is suggested that in the very near future there's going to be an announcement that Iran's agreed with Russia to go ahead and build 4 to 8 new nuclear reactors. This Putin knows how to move. He is a man on the move. Look what he's accomplished since the first of the year. Ukraine. He walked in and took over Crimea. And what has anyone done to him so far? Nothing. He made the gas deal with North Korea. He wanted to put gas lines and or railroad lines through North Korea, Russia through North Korea, so he could get to South Korea, because South Korea wants to buy oil and gas from Russia. Understand that the biggest moneymaker for Russia, 75% of its income, Russia, is gas and oil exports. But they got to get it to these other countries. And notice what he's done. While we're worrying about Europe, and we've tried to block him out and put in sanctions on him, he's turned his back and said, okay, I'll go to the East. I'm going to Asia now. You guys futz around with Europe. I'm going to the new country, the new market, Asia, and he's doing good. Now, he had to get through North Korea. They weren't on that friendly terms. North Korea owes a lot of money to Russia. He forgave 90% of the debt, just like that, billions of dollars. For permission to put that thing through, the natural gas pipeline or a railroad. Amazing what he's accomplished, okay? And then the biggest thing was what? Last week, 2 weeks ago, the announcement that China and Russia had signed an agreement, a 30-year contract for $400 billion. China needs gas. Where are they going to get it? They're going to get it from Russia. What a contract. Now, do you think China's ever going to vote against anything Russia wants or turn their back on Russia? These two have been solidified. They may have danced together in the past, but we thought China was going to come with us on certain things. They are now solidified. Who's going to stop him? How is Putin going to be stopped? We're not going to get help from the other European countries. I'll tell you why. Russia supplies a great percentage of gas to European countries. A friend of mine in Italy wrote to me an email and said, my God, don't do anything to Russia because we need their gas. Italy gets 60% of its gas from Russia, and if we don't get their gas, I can't cook. That simple. It's a basic. And the people in France and in England, they don't want any of this stuff, any fights with Russia. They say, yeah, they're bad boys. They shouldn't have done what they did in Ukraine, Crimea. But that's the way it goes. We'll let them keep it. We'll forgive and forget. But please, we're not really going to stand with the United States on anything major against Russia. Obama, in the meantime, he's got a hot potato here to deal with. The problem with Obama is he must do something. You don't have to go to war, though you can send troops in. I don't know what the solution is. Sharper negotiations. But what's happening and what the European people are saying, too, Obama talks the talk, but he does not walk the walk. He talks the talk, but he does not walk the walk. It started with Syria. Once this red line was crossed, we were going in. We didn't go in. I'm happy we didn't go to war, But Russia and Assad have gotten away with murder, in effect, over there, and we did not stand up to the word which our president gave. We've got to do something, because we can't let Putin continue as he is. He is a bully. He's going to keep doing until somebody stops him. Then he'll stop. He'll say, look all I accomplished. I got away with murder, and he'll take a break for a couple of years. But if we don't do something, he's going to keep going. And someday, in the near future, could end up in a major war. This is a tough situation to resolve. I don't know the answers. I don't get paid to know the answers. It's above my pay grade. But my president and my government better do something, and something right, because I think they're doing wrong right now. They're not being assertive enough. Let's go now to the Euro Union. The greatest mistake that ever occurred, to Europe, forming this Euro Union. They were all pigs. They were going to loan money to each other through a bank they were going to form, and everyone would prosper. The only one that's really prospered is Germany, and Germany's got tons of money in the Euro Union Bank, and much of the money loaned to the countries that can't pay back, like Greece, Turkey, Spain, Italy, comes is German money, okay? Now, I laugh when I say this. I've been to Greece twice for long periods of time. I've been to Europe a lot lately. And it's all the same, what's going on. These countries can't pay. They know they can't pay. Germany knows they can't pay. But Germany knows that if they don't get paid back, Germany's going to be in trouble because they loan the money out. And if they don't get paid, they're in economic distress. So that's why they play the banker role hard-ass and say you must pay. So here's the new rule the European Union came out that we all missed. It came out as of last January 1. The gross product. They want, the Euro Union has ruled, that every member must include on its financial statements, income from all activities. Now listen to what I'm going to say, regardless of their legality. Which means, and this is specifically in whatever the Euro Union passed for January 1, it includes monies from drugs, prostitution, and smuggling. In other words, they don't even get the tax on most of these countries. They don't have a handle on the illicit gains. They know millions and billions are made off the drug industry. Prostitution's big all over Europe. They have 10, 12-story buildings, former apartment buildings, loaded. One operation with prostitutes in every apartment. Smuggling. So they're going to cook the books. We want you to show. We want you to estimate. What happens in 2 or 3 years when the money doesn't come in? They're saying cook your books now because it will look better and we may be able to extend your loans and things like that based upon your phony financial statements which show you are making more money. A fraud on everybody. And the Euro Union is cutting their own throat here. It's a temporary solution. They're saying again, cook your books, my friends. We know it. We don't care. You know, desperate people do desperate things. Desperate nations do desperate things. Spain already started this in January when it was time to do it. They're cooking their books already. Italy begins October 1st. Boy, I got some things to tell you on Greece. Greece announced this week that they want to sell 110 of their best beaches to pay off their Euro Union debts, to pay back Germany, in effect. They want to sell 110 of their best beaches. They're going to privatize them and want to sell them. I think this is wild. I think this is horrible. This is terrible. In 2010, though, guess what Angela Merkel, the head of Germany, said, and the leaders of the German government, they said, you people are going bankrupt. You must pay your debts, and we want you to sell the Acropolis, the Parthenon, Corfu, Mykonos, Santorini, and even my little island, the Barmagos, they listed them. Sell them to get money to pay your obligation to us. Well, it didn't fly. Can you imagine they want Greece to sell the Acropolis and the Parthenon? I can't believe it. But let me tell you what happened. People come out of the woodwork. Donald Trump said, I want to buy Crete. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook said, I want to buy Corfu and Mykonos. Jay-Z wanted to buy Rhodes. And Taylor Perry said, you know, I want to buy Acropolis. I want to turn it into a museum for Afro-American heritage. Well, that's the story for this week. I'm not getting to Mongolia this week. Maybe next week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Things are going on. We're in tough times. We're in scary times, and I hope it all works out because we could be in deep trouble. Remember, if you would, that I've written a book, The World Upside Down. It's available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. If you enjoy this show, you will enjoy my book. It's a series of essays on political and social things. I'm in the process of writing another book on my first trip to Greece, which is going to be lovely because Greece is a lovely place. This show is archived immediately at 9:30 tonight. You can read it, listen to it anytime. And as of tomorrow morning, it will be on YouTube and it'll be available all the time. I thank you for joining me this week. I look forward to being with you again next week. Good night.